This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 44 for March 5th, 2006. Thank you all so much for being here. We are at the Apple Store in San Francisco, California. No, we had no idea that Apple was going to make an announcement this week. It's just coincidental, but we're glad to be here, and we've got a great TWiT lineup with us. Starting off to my right with Mr. Roger Chang. Hey, Roger. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome back to the Apple Store. Did you wear your TWiT hoodie?
Actually, it's in the washing machine.
It's in the... Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank God.
Those will shrink, you know. To my left, ladies and gentlemen, Steve Wozniak, without whom there would be no Apple Store or Apple Computer at all. Steve, we're so glad to have you back on the panel.
And Leo, I admire you so much. I always love being with you on these things.
Thank
you. And I promise to try to hold down my toys and jokes.
We asked Steve no laser jokes, although I was wearing the glowing green earring for St. Patrick's Day. You like that? Patrick says it's going to destroy the compression algorithms. They're going to go crazy. I can't do it. Patrick Darton is here, my good buddy from the Screensavers and DL.TV, where he's bringing it back to life. And we'll talk about a new show I just saw a pilot for on DL.TV. That's great. Very excited about that.
I hope so.
Also, we're very glad to welcome from CNET's Buzz Out Loud. Is it Buzz Out Loud or Out Loud?
Buzz Out Loud.
Out Loud. Molly Wood, ladies and gentlemen. So glad to have her here. You may applaud.
Oh, stop. You should applaud what?
All the women are applauding. Finally, they've got some estrogen on this darn panel. It's about time.
That's what I thought.
And Roman Loyola is also here, former producer at Tech TV and now at Mac Addict Magazine. Great to have you. Wearing his cool. That's a cool Apple.
Yeah, I got it at the Mothership store.
The Mothership,
at Apple. It shouldn't be any indication of my thoughts and feelings about Apple.
So you don't necessarily like Apple because you paid $60
for a switch. No, I love Apple.
Okay. Hey, there are about 100 people in the audience with TWiT toothbrushes. I don't think
what this is.
Yeah, This Week in Tech, toothbrushes. It's a TWiT brush. So I don't think any of them, that would be no implied, you know, endorsement just because they brush their teeth with a TWiT brush.
Is it an implication about how often they brush their teeth?
It might be.
Because
aren't
that is not nice.
Parts of our computer that we clean?
With a toothbrush.
Yes, yeah, so that's what the kind of a brush it is.
It could be a computer brush.
Keyboard brush.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. So, of course, the big story of the week, or at least one of them, there's many. Actually, maybe not the big story of the week, but it is the story we're going to lead off with, is the Apple product announcement. Molly was down there. I was down there. Were you there? I saw you. That's right. Roman Loyola was down there. Well, let's start with you, Roman. You're covering it for a Mac publication. You know, I guess really the story is how the press made such a big deal out of what Apple clearly wanted to be just a little announcement, right?
Yeah, I mean, the predictions of what was going to be...
It went crazy.
It was crazy, and, you know, the severe letdown, I believe, is an understatement about...
But we were guilty of it, too. I mean, you know, all Apple said
what
was...
What are you like? The Apple just wanted it to be a small little gathering
with four or five
friends. So they sent invitations to everyone at every major media outlet in North America.
Yeah, but it wasn't
and
like...
Sometimes, it got big.
Sometimes these announcements are... Get ready to get your socks blown off. This time it said, come join us for a few, fun new products.
And the rumors are unexciting enough to not expect too much anyway.
Well, I mean, everybody...
Manage expectation.
What did people think? It was going to be a video iPod, right?
I think people thought it would be everything from a video iPod to a standalone DVR to the Apple HD TV. I mean, it doesn't really matter what the invitation says.
G5s and Intel processors.
It matters that you got an invitation, and it's at Apple, and it said it's going to be a thing. There's going to be a thing, and that's enough.
I actually did not get an invitation at first.
My man.
Oh, me neither.
I've never gotten an Apple invitation.
And so I felt really left out of, everyone was going to the party but me.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's here.
He brought beer.
He brought beer.
Oh, wow.
What do you think this is, digitation? It wouldn't be a Kevin Rose show without some beer. Can we get a mic on Mr. Rose? We do have a mic. You don't have the fancy mics we do. I'm so glad to see you.
We thought
you weren't going to be here, so we just got started.
Actually, this event at Apple, I normally get invited to all the big Apple events, and I wasn't invited to this one. Usually I hear from Steve, but I may have actually turned it down because of a conflict in schedule, and then the conflict erased itself, but I know I wasn't there.
You know, okay, so they announced two new minis, I think overpriced, right? I mean, by like a couple hundred bucks, this mini, don't you think? And then, well, what do you think? I don't know. Roman,
well, I like to go to these events, and when they come to the pricing point, I like to try and guess the price.
Yeah.
And my guesses were way under what they actually have the prices at.
Well, so they actually raised the price of the mini from $499 to $599. Why? Because it's Intel? Because it's got a remote control?
Because they felt they were undercharging for Airport Express and Bluetooth?
I don't know. I mean,
maybe they just didn't want the people who bought the previous versions like me to feel like heels.
Are you talking? Kevin's lawyer is asking.
Exactly.
They said the Wi-Fi was hacked, so I guess we can't get on.
Oh, yeah, you can't. You hear it. Yeah. I have something for
Plus
you.
Plus, you don't want to. I heard a dirty picture comes up.
Yeah.
No, no. Watch out, everyone.
Like, you know.
It's not even dirty. It's so far beyond dirty that you don't even.
Dirty is the queen's innocent
two hands
way to put
in
that.
There.
I'm giving Kevin an Ethernet wire so that he can plug in. Yeah, well, that was a weird situation. It was actually kind of cute. There was some guy in the audience, right?
Yeah.
And
I walked over and looked over his shoulder because, you know, there's like 18 people here with computers, but only one is, you know, running 17 command line windows and three in Vi and watching traffic go by. And, like, 2 seconds later, the Apple guys are certainly, like, whispering at him, and he's, like, packing up his notebook and disappearing.
We could have you arrested, but if you leave now, we won't press charges.
You don't make us look at any more pictures like
that.
Oh,
it was a nasty picture. So the Mini, I mean, I think this is a good product. It's a media center, and it really clearly shows that Apple wants to be in the living room right there next to the high-def TV, and, you know, it's good for that. That's a little expensive.
You sound excited about it.
You know, that was the thing. All the press was, like, depressed afterwards. It was like, oh, that's all.
Well, you forgot the $99, you know, iPod case.
Okay. That was hot.
And the $349 portable
boombox.
We are
in the Apple store.
Look, as somebody who owns like seven iPods, I can look at an iPod case and be like, woo, $99.
I don't think you can blame Apple for this. I think you can blame the press for just getting their expectations so high.
I think you can blame Apple for this.
Really?
Yeah.
No,
really
I
How so?
Well, and I'm not actually even saying that I'm that disappointed with what they announced. I think the Mac Minis are a pretty good incremental step toward the home media integration that is going to be great when it all comes together. And I guess there's going to be like eventually maybe one piece of hardware or software that ties it all together, and then we'll all be thrilled. But I definitely blame Apple for historically creating that kind of expectation and that kind of hype. I mean, they can't
help at this
point. Well,
should they not announce it? Should they just slip it out?
Yeah. Why not? Issue a press release.
Don't have Steve do a speech.
Don't have Steve do a speech. Don't say, like, journalists converge on Cupertino. Ooh. You know.
We did.
Create your own traffic jam. Yeah.
I personally
of course
converged.
We converged. It hurt so bad when I didn't get an invitation until the second day.
You know, but it's like a comedian who makes jokes, and, you know, you might have 10 lousy dud jokes for one good one.
Yes.
And, you know, so every once in a while, Apple's going to maybe have one. Something's not too exciting to to most of us. And,
you know, hey, I did think was exciting was this front row with Rendezvous. I'm sorry, bonjour. Even Steve Jobs can't pronounce bonjour. By the way, you notice he said PowerBook twice in his speech?
Yes.
So I'm not the only one who can't say MacBook Pro.
Well, because PowerBook is such a good
name. It'll
take
a while. Yeah.
So the bonjour that's enabled now in front row means that if I walk into somebody's house with iTunes running on a Mac or a PC and Wi-Fi, that any videos or music or photos on there can be displayed in their, you know. What are you laughing at?
I'm just thinking of, like, you know, we had the thing
what we
with
just
the
had
hacker
happen?
In the pictures. And,
yeah, maybe not that picture.
You know, you walk into the wrong section of the dorms at school and be like, oh, my God.
No, you have to specifically ask for it. But I think that that's kind of a neat technology. So any computer in the house, like, wouldn't you want this as a PC user, that any computer in the house that has content on it on the wireless network can be seen on the HDTV?
You know, I've spent so many years closing off the network from people to come in and do nefarious things on it. And I have a public IP address open, Steve. Don't look at me with horror like that. I love sharing my internet connection, but I don't particularly need, you know, my tax information or you know, my banking information floating out there.
I just got a great OS X app called Connect 360. Have you heard about that?
No, what's that?
It allows you to share all of your pictures and any songs that you have on your Mac with an Xbox 360.
Really?
Yeah.
Wirelessly.
So it's great. So I just turn it on, and it connects right to my Xbox 360 wirelessly.
Do you have to modify the 360, or
it's only
the Mac?
Yeah, it emulates it. Acts like it's a Windows box, and it works great.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Is that free, or is that a commercial?
I think it's shareware, but
that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think that's the idea, right? Is we have media all over our house, and if we can get it where we want it. That's what everybody wants. That's the holy grail. That's what, you know.
So anything better than Elgato for running TV over the Mac Mini?
Yes, because it's DVI. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not HDTV, is it, Roman?
No, it's not.
It's DVI, though.
Yeah.
Yes. No HDCP, no copy protection. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. I think that's a huge scandal that's brewing. We've talked about it a couple of times on Twitter, but I want to bring it up again. What about these speakers? $349. Steve Jobs says, this is where he went a little overboard. I've spent a lot of money. I don't want to tell you how much money on a stereo. I'm getting rid of my expensive stereo for these speakers.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait outside when that happens. Where's the back door, Steve? I'm ready for that old stereo. Somehow I don't think the Rebel speakers are coming flying out the window.
No.
Anytime soon.
Plus, potentially the only statement he made that might be more unlikely than that was the comment that people would buy several of them at $350
well, probably
a pop.
Because they want like two, so it does really look like a stereo.
Right, so it looks like a real stereo.
Yeah, they do.
Wow. I feel like the iPod Hi-Fi, I actually have been wanting a good set, kind of an iPod speaker for a long time. That one I probably won't buy because it is $350, but I also almost felt like that was kind of a Steve Vanity product a little bit because he is such an audiophile.
Right.
I mean, I think people do want good sounding iPod speakers, but the people who have been waiting for that possibly already bought it.
Of course, it's hard to judge the sound quality, and if he said you have to listen to them at high volume to judge it, I'm sorry, people that know, you listen to it at low volume with your eyes shut, does it sound like the real thing to judge speakers?
Right. Classical did not sound particularly good. The rock and pop was fine. I think you told me that, and I went up and listened, and I agree with you. It was not.
Yeah, everything. We listened to a bunch of classical music in the demo rooms, and I'm sure these classical songs were at 128-bit.
Well, that's the other thing.
I'm an audiophile. Let me put my 128-bit song up and see what it sounds like. And all the classical sounded crunch. It just didn't sound good.
So they even bother trying to put in a line input or nothing?
Yeah, there is a line.
There is a line input.
No, I mean like to demo, to say how
well, that was the thing. They had these demo rooms. One was set up as a dorm room that actually had pants on the floor.
You know what it had? It had an autographed Flogging Molly t-shirt.
Yeah, they did.
Now, I think that made it pretty authentic, right?
That's a beautiful thing.
I almost
thing.
Stole it for you, Patrick.
I appreciate that.
I tried to, but they stopped me. So I asked Jaws, who's the worldwide product manager for iPod, if they had the in-house engineering. I mean, designing speakers is a specialty. And he said, no, we design this in-house. Do you think that these guys are good enough to design high-end stereo speakers in-house?
No, I absolutely believe so. And I believe that normally the quality control driven by Steve himself would be there unless he was too busy with the Pixar-Disney deal. But the trouble is the first thing comes is speakers, and the second is your environment. So to get really good quality sound somewhere like at home takes a lot just good speakers.
There's no separation either. I mean, they're in a shoebox. Yeah.
I think the most plausible scenarios for those were definitely the upstairs rooms were an office and a living room and the dorm room and the kitchen. And the most plausible scenarios were the dorm room and the kitchen by far. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to put that thing anywhere,
set up a stereo there.
It's not going to replace
your room.
Stereo.
Boombox runs on the D cells. I mean, I'm mobile, but that's just a little more than me, my size.
It's hard to pass it as a really high-end unit, though, when it runs off batteries as well. There's something weird about that.
Yeah,
does that feel that way?
He turns around and says, it works on D-cells.
I know, it's like,
there's some people who like DC-powered systems because it allows them more control over the actual voltage flowing into the system.
Yeah, but those people would use car batteries, right? They would use big
They use flat
hours. Also, I see what you're saying, because it also has handles.
Right.
So
but they didn't put the handle
stereo
on the right
slash
place.
Boombox.
Yeah. It's got to be able to carry it on your shoulder. What's this like? It's an ice chest thing.
That'll hurt.
Does the iPod get like secured into the top? So like if you do kind of
No.
So if you
want
this,
that, you know what you should get, and I think they even sound better and they're cheaper, is the Altec Lansing IM7s. The iPod goes right into it. It's a great sounding boom box with a handle. It even comes with a kind of a S&M strap, leather strap. Have you seen that?
It's available.
Not the S&M
it's
part.
I brought it home. My wife said, honey, you got something to share with me? It looks like it's got two little collars, little leather collars that go on either end, and a strap, and he turns it into But Altec Lansing is a nice.
That is a nice speaker system.
It sounds great.
I've seen it on a lot of television shows as well.
Really?
Yeah, I think I saw it recently on Las Vegas.
Now we wanted to get you on.
Just a little aside.
Just a little something. You see a lot of Macs on TV shows.
You do.
Yes.
I don't know if that's Apple going to them for product placement. I think a lot of TV screenwriters and producers are Mac fans, mm-hmm. and they just do it.
I think it's partly product placement, though, because a lot of times you'll see a little courtesy of Apple at the end of the show.
Is it still, on 24, all the good guys used Macs and all the bad guys used PCs. Is that still that way?
this season, it's like all over the map.
Okay.
I think Jack Bauer's had a different cell phone every episode.
Courtesy.
Not that I watch a lot of TV.
You know, Adam. So I wanted to get Steve on last week to talk about this. You were down in New Zealand and got interviewed in the New Zealand Herald by a guy named Peter Nowak, who quoted you, and it made headlines everywhere. Steve Wozniak, Apple's other Steve, says the Intel move was a bad idea. Apple's going in the wrong direction. I mean, big headlines.
You know what? I take phone calls. I talk to reporters whenever I have time. I'm real accessible and open. And I read those headlines, and I was just shocked. It's 180 degrees. There were at least two categories of headlines that were 180 degrees different than how I think, how I speak to other people, how everyone close to me knows, on my Macintosh forums, what I type and say. It's like they got it all wrong. So I basically accused the reporter of being a jerk with his own agenda. He kept wanting to try to push. Steve Wozniak is against Apple doing this. Steve Wozniak ain't on Apple. There's been a lot of press over all the years that want to find these things, and sometimes I will discuss subjects. Unfortunately, I talk in like 30-second complex thoughts sometimes. Well, and everybody wants that 5-second headline. And I explained to him, for example, that he said I wanted to, I'm against the move to Intel. I've always been for the move to Intel. It makes sense for good reasons. The most negative thing I've said is I was hoping it would be something like a new technology like IBM's copper technology was once, so it will extend through the generations. That's the most negative thing I've ever said.
Right.
And then he said, well, isn't there sort of a thing with Mac users that is against Big Brother, against the big, bad, evil empire? And so I said, yes, because I'm on forums, and I know there's a lot of Mac zealots, and I'm not one of them. And I used the word we to try to explain to him how there's a lot of thinking like this, but I am not one of them. I even said nice things, very nice things about Microsoft in the article. Figure that out. It doesn't match a headline saying Steve thinks Apple's move to Intel is wrong. That's totally inaccurate.
And we've interviewed you a lot, and I know that one of the reasons I like to interview you is you're not guarded in your statements.
Well, I got lucky. In this case, I got lucky. Sometimes you don't really have a recourse through the press, and somehow a few of my comments got reported by other reporters, and this reporter printed verbatim the whole transcript of what I'd said to him.
Right.
And I read it, and yes, it's very intelligent, and it's logical, and it makes sense.
So you stand by the transcript.
And I stand by the transcript, okay. And he says the transcript proves him right.
Yeah.
It proves him wrong.
Well, what we'll do
is you just have to read more than 5 seconds.
We'll put a link and let other people be the judge. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that the press has misquoted.
No. And as a matter of fact, I don't hold it against the reporter, really, because reporters have to make mistakes, and they're in a hurry, and they have a business, and sometimes they don't realize that their question has sort of led into a comment that never would have been made, and they print part of your words, but it's not necessarily deliberate.
So for the record, what do you think of Apple's direction?
I think the computers are great, and I think the iPod is great, and I think the move to Intel is a good smart move for the right reasons. I've even said it and explained what the reasons are from the very start.
I don't know. I was freaking out with the move to Intel.
There are just some big Macintosh zealots. Everywhere I go, I'm around strong Macintosh people. Oh no, this must be bad. We're getting in line with Microsoft somehow. Microsoft's not even a bad guy. You know, they even want to be more like Apple and creative, and they want to.
There's no evil.
I know some people in Microsoft.
There's no evil anywhere.
I don't like to say bad things about people, basically.
We were watching a video on YouTube that purports to be a leaked video of the Origami project, which Microsoft has been. You know, they got page every week. There's something new. Yes, it's very cryptic.
I saw that.
What do you think the Origami is? Have you seen the movie?
I mean, it might be this little device that they're showing off. I mean, you're talking about that same one. It looks kind of like a PSP.
It's a little bigger, though. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, at least in the concept.
I don't know, man. I have the Trio 700 with the Pocket, whatever they're calling it now, 2006 or whatever it is, and it's. I'm not a huge fan of miniaturized like Microsoft OS.
What about this? Look at this. This is Mobile 5. This is a Sprint PCS. This the
6700.
In what
keyboard
OS
like
is
that?
Running?
It's Mobile 5, Windows Mobile 5.
Yeah, that's what mine is too.
It's the power is it's not charged, but the keyboard's nice. How do you like the screen?
Yeah. The keyboard is nice.
I thought I charged it before
it's
I came
Sprint,
down here.
Sprint though, then you're stuck with Sprint.
Yeah, and it's got a little antenna sticking out. Well, there's another one I'm going to get to from T-Mobile that doesn't have an antenna sticking out. Very similar form factor.
Nice.
I think that's. Do you like the keyboard?
I think that's about
the
right size, though. When you're talking about a small device that you can check email on, yeah, and you know, pull up the occasional web page, but anything more than that, and I think these devices are really lacking in a lot of areas. Well, you really can't do a whole lot with them. You can listen to music.
You know why I got this is because the Sling Box at home, right? Hooked up to the TiVo and the
right
cable, and they now have
right
a Windows Mobile client.
How does it work? Is
Sling
it
Sling Media Mobile?
No, it's pretty well. If you're in an Edge or an EVDO area where you get some, you know, you're getting 400 or 500 right kilobits, it's good. Looks good. You can watch your home.
Do you still have to pay? I mean, there's an unlimited plan now, right? Data wise.
Yeah, that's the key.
Because otherwise, it's
with
like $600 a month.
Yeah, T-Mobile has unlimited. And Sprint does. Verizon still doesn't, I don't think. So that's the key. You've got to find a carrier. Otherwise, you'd be paying by the minute.
I think Verizon has unlimited, but it's really expensive. Sprint, actually, for whatever else you can say about them, their unlimited data plan, I think, is the cheapest.
It's the cheapest, yeah.
It's like
T-Mobile's
15.
$49, Verizon 60 or something like that.
Yeah, it was 80, and it came all the way down.
And this is also on top of your regular cell phone bill.
Right.
Unless you have an Edge card that you use in your notebook.
Well, then that's 60.
Yes.
Yeah, $500, $120, $150 to $200. What's the most you ever paid to get a contract canceled, Kevin? Because at one point you were like jumping providers like every 3 weeks.
I'm hooked on cell phones. I like the cool cell phones. And sometimes, you know, I've seen the actual pictures of the new Sidekicks. Those look cool.
The three?
They're smaller.
It's supposed
to be slimmer.
Really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the Sidekick. It's just too bulky for me right now.
Is that soon?
I don't know. I don't know when that's coming.
Will they still be tied to T-Mobile?
I don't know. I haven't heard much about the new Sidekick.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the Motorola Q, which I hear they keep changing a lot, but it's based on the Razr, and it's going to be a little smartphone.
Cool. Yeah.
I am skeptical, though, about Windows Mobile. I have the Trio 600. I haven't upgraded to the 650, but I'm pretty happy with
the Did you see that
the
there was there's a
OS
blog posting somebody did on how to get out of a contract?
Now you tell me.
Well, I don't know if you want to do it. It turns out nobody charges you anymore for roaming, right? It's just kind of free, but they still have to pay for roaming with the carrier that you're roaming. So the key is to make it so painful for the company in roaming charges that they kick you off. And in fact, the guy showed his Singular bill or his contract, and it says very specifically, if at any point we end up paying more in roaming charges than you're paying us, we have the right to terminate your contract.
That's funny.
So he says what you do is you just make a point for every 400 minutes you spend on their network, you go spend on somebody else's network, and eventually you're going to get a call saying, we don't really need you anymore. Thank you for
that's funny.
Ouch.
That's like David Brager. He's really cheap when it comes to this kind of stuff. So he bought a phone in Rhode Island so that his nights and weekends start 3 hours earlier.
That's
and
brilliant.
That's
a great hack.
I know.
Yeah, that's clever.
You know, I keep wondering who's this guy
like
calling me from 401. It's him.
It's him.
I'm in Rhode Island.
Clever.
Rhode Island nights and weekends. But what do people in Rhode Island do? They buy a phone from London?
They're doomed. Yeah.
Yeah, then you end up paying $4 a minute.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. No.
See, this is kind of interesting because this whole conversation shows what the biggest problem is with Origami, because we're so much more interested in talking about cell phones and cell phone plans.
Yeah.
Well, no phone. If that thing is just a laptop replacement and I can't make calls from it, then I've still got that one device.
It
I
looks
may still
like
have an MP3 player.
A shrunk tablet PC.
Yeah.
Basically,
well,
Wi-Fi.
Have you looked at Microsoft's sort of like viral advertising site they've put together for it?
Yeah.
OrigamiProject.com.
It's silly. And that, well, now week two is up, I think. Or is week three up now? I don't know.
It shows you all of the places Origami will be.
Right.
Mountaintops and Ferris wheels. And
I think they're trying to get that
airports.
Apple kind of buzz going, right?
They are. Well, they had it for a second. And then they couldn't maintain their own secrecy. And they just like got all excited and then told the press, like, yes, it's a mini tablet. Yay!
They did
and
a fairly
like, well,
good job.
Now you blew it.
They did a fairly good job, though, with the Xbox 360.
Yes.
And like leaking pictures of that and getting hype around that product.
Yeah.
But yeah, they blew it with this one.
And they kind of blew it with the 360 too, really, if you think about it.
Without a phone for
connectivity.
Oh,
excited, though.
Yes. But then they couldn't buy it. That's the part they blew.
As long as it better folds in some fashion. I mean.
Yeah, otherwise, why Origami?
Yeah.
Maybe it's paper. Maybe it's made out of paper.
Maybe it's
it
digital.
Folds all of your other portable devices into one lockdown Microsoft thing.
And look at this is so not Microsoft. The title of the window the browser window is Hi There. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
The one thing that seems a little promising is if you watch the week two video, there's a potential placement on the dashboard of a car, which indicates that it could have GPS built in, which, you know, I might not mind seeing that.
I think that's imminent. I think you're going to see cell phones with GPS exposed and nav software, turn-by-turn direction software.
And if you're on certain cell phone carrier nets, it'll be locked down into that cell phone carrier net, so you can use their mapping system at $4 a minute.
But nobody else is.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're so right.
You're right.
They'll figure out a way to cripple that Bluetooth
touch
functionality.
Me. So do I have to touch this thing that says touch me to get
no.
the
device?
It's all about Howard forums. Hack your cell phone.
Ooh. This has got to be the worst thing to do on a podcast is to look at something and go, ooh.
And for everyone to just stare at it and not
just
talk.
Stare at it, not talk.
Sorry, guys.
No, it's...
Well, it's like, you know, it's like Flash put together by somebody's pretentious little brother.
You know, I bet you this was actually just a marketing exercise, and someone came along and said, yeah, maybe we should attach a product to it.
You know, more power to Microsoft. That's right. We don't have a product, but we've got a great marketing campaign.
I think they did accomplish some pretty good buzz for a little while. For a brief moment in time, I was asked to talk on CNBC about it.
Really?
When's the last time you gave a press interview about anything Microsoft was doing, you know?
We just figured out the timing on the Apple announcement was because they wanted to just stomp on Origami.
That's what I thought. That's really what I thought was going
Even
on.
Underwhelmed, we're more excited about
Quick,
that
what
than
can
we're
release?
About Origami.
It's true, though.
We got
more
Origami.
We got a $99 leather case. Quick!
That's hot.
What do we got that Steve can talk about?
So Microsoft has announced that there will be 6 versions of Vista. 2 for business, 3 for residential users, 1 for emerging markets. But here's the beauty of it. If you buy one of them, you can upgrade online to any other version.
For
what,
nominal
if you don't
fee?
Like it?
For a nominal fee.
Oh. Try before you buy.
Microsoft contended the Vista lineup will enable users to easily accomplish tasks.
Nice.
I'm not kidding. Find what they want. Enjoy entertainment.
So it thinks for you.
Stay connected at home or on the go. And help ensure PCs run smoothly and securely.
Right.
All right.
Well, yeah, but it's funny. As I was reading Mary Jo Foley, who's at Microsoft Watch, and she pointed out there's currently 6 different... I'm reading verbatim, so let me say
that. I like her
that.
A lot. She's actually good. Yeah.
She has insane connections at Microsoft. Yeah. But it says Microsoft currently offers 6 different versions of Windows XP. XP Home, Professional, Media Center, Tablet PC, and Professional X64, and the Windows XP N Edition. So it's, you know, it's still 4 more versions than probably anybody really needs. And you know what? There's just nobody cares, including me.
But it's really only 4 consumer versions, right? Did you say 1 is Enterprise and 1 is N, which is the kind of European market
the courts in Europe for bundling their browser with their OS.
Right, exactly. And so that's actually the same as XP, right?
Pretty much. XP Home, Professional Media Center.
So it sounds,
PC.
I mean, once again, it's just their marketing problem by them, which is it sounds a lot worse than it is.
There's no Windows Vista Tablet PC Edition. Maybe that's Origami. Windows Vista Origami Tablet Browsing in the Toilet PC Edition.
I'll take 2.
Now, this tablet had battery life?
Yeah, I'm not really offended by all the offerings because any piece of hardware you buy, you usually have a few variations. At least a computer.
Yeah, I think if there really only are 4 editions, that's not that different than
for a while
NXP.
They were talking 7.
Yeah.
And that was a little outrageous.
And that was actually another weird little Microsoft thing where the 7 different or 8 different versions appeared on a website and then
they were gone.
It was almost like a test.
Right.
Like the Origami
video.
See what people would
say.
Exactly.
How many can you
You know,
remember?
If you break down the what you said that Vista is going to be able to do, it just translates to fun and new. Uh-huh.
They're made shipping with all the bits, right? All it is just a quick little switch, and it turns into a different version. That's what they're saying.
That's been their policy in the past.
So just buy the cheapest one and find the hack and then do it. That's what people are going to do.
That's what they say. It'll be
Kevin's
4 operating systems in a single disk package. Once installed, a quick trip to the control panel is all you'll need to visit the Windows Anytime Upgrade Wizard.
Oh, nice.
And then you can go from Home Basic all the way to Ultimate.
Ultimate.
Vista Ultimate.
Sounds like bloatware.
Awesome.
But is the one below that the penultimate? I want Windows Vista penultimate. I don't know. Did you see the Pope got an iPod, by the way?
and taking a hard left turn into the direction.
Speaking of the
He got a 2 gigabyte nano. He doesn't have a lot of musical money. Maybe not a lot of money. I don't know.
Maybe, you know.
The podcast
has his sermons on
I think
it.
That's
he
what it was. It was
verbatim.
Vatican Radio gave it to him.
Yeah. Because there is a Vatican podcast, I think.
Yeah, there is. Mm-hmm. Not the Catholic
cast?
Insider, though.
The Pope
that's not an official.
The Pope
I love the Catholic.
Does he subscribe to Twit?
Possibly. We could, you know, let's send him a 4 gig nano with Twit on it.
There you go.
Hey,
bribing the Pope is what has just happened here.
The 2 gig with some Catholic stuff on it, or the 4 gig with Twit on it. I'll take a Twit. Oh, he's not Italian. I'm sorry, he's German now. But I think once you become the Pope, you start to talk like this.
Yeah, do we get a planetary indulgence with this?
Why is it this show? We refer to the Pope more than maybe some computer operating systems. I don't know what it is about this show. Now Queen Elizabeth has an iPod. President Bush has an iPod. Pope Benedict has an iPod. So that's good.
Yeah, they're adopting technology. Is it? You want them to be like listening through like a 20-year-old like Walkman or something? I mean, it's like.
Well, of course, the good thing is, be careful. The white headphones go very well with the cassock, I think. You know, with the little white.
And you can hide it under the.
Who's going to be the first to do one of those iPod ads with the Pope?
SNL.
Yeah, you're right. So, good news. When we just as we go to press, because we're taping this on Friday, that the RIM deal is done with NTP. You must be happy as an inventor was to see that NTP. Got $617 million. They got the license fee.
I don't know, my own estimates, just a number of people I know that use BlackBerries, are satisfied with them, and how much they sell for. I thought that was a high settlement.
It seems high.
Yeah.
There's only, what, 1 million, 2 million? There's not a whole lot of BlackBerry users in the U.S. It's a small number.
So,
you know, it's better than a billion, which is what some of the analysts said it was going to do.
And it's not much more than the, I think it was 450 was the proposed.
Yeah.
Settlement that fell apart.
$160 million here or there, you know.
I mean, does anyone here think that they were kind of, they paid out that much because they were kind of, you know,
they could have settled for a few hundred million less if they'd done it, you know, multiple years ago at the beginning of this debacle.
I think they really thought those patents were going to be thrown out and that it was going to, and that the judge was going to wait.
Well, and I think that's the key is that even though 2 days before the hearing, one of the patents was invalidated, the judge still said, you shouldn't be here. This should have been settled. I want you to go settle it. And I think they really realized we are at risk of being forced into a settlement here, regardless of the patent. In fact, this settlement is regardless of the patents, even if the rest of them are overturned, they still get the money. So I think you're probably right. This is going to happen.
At least the feds are happy.
Bill Cosby.
Yes.
Yeah, you know this story? Waxy Links. Do you ever go to Waxy Links? I love Waxy.
I do. It's a great site.
Waxy.org?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's just like great random links.
Yeah, pretty much.
The guy who does it, Andy Bio, no relation to Scott. I don't think.
Bummer.
Is fighting the Cosby clan. He runs, I think this is an interesting story. He is running some Cosby parodies.
Was.
Was. Well, no, he still is.
No,
they're called
still
the House
is.
Of Cosbys. And Cosby, the Cosby whatever, the state, he's not dead. The holders of the Cosby
the
license.
Legal team
the legal team
to it on the
has been writing letters to other websites and has got them to take it down. But Bio said, no, I'm not going to take it down. And this is his point, and I think it's a good point. He says, this is, in a way, discriminating against bloggers. Because, you know, Saturday Night Live does Cosby parodies. This is parody. It's protected. There's plenty of parodies in mainstream media. Why are they going after me? And I think that's a very good point.
Well, what do they accuse of? The First Amendment says if the person is well known, they can do anything they want, say any lies they want about them.
It's parody.
And it's legal as long as their intent was not to hurt them.
Right.
Right.
This is a quote from Bio. More than anything, this strikes me as a special kind of discrimination against amateur creators on the Internet. Mad Magazine, Saturday Night Live, South Park, The Simpsons, Family Guy, and countless other mainstream media sources have parodied Bill Cosby over the years.
And the key seems to be where he says it takes so little effort to threaten a small web-based artist.
Exactly,
and that was
right.
Exactly the chilling effect of the DMCA, too, which is you can just come along and say this violates the DMCA,
right.
Or it's,
right.
You know, it here's a C&D, and most websites don't have anywhere near the kind of resources to put up a fight. So they just fold.
Or their ISP shuts them down.
Or their ISP, yeah, exactly.
Because a lot of, in the early days, a lot of people are citing that you're in violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and we can lock you up forever. And it's like, there was no copy protection on the thing they're supposedly exploiting, which means it has nothing to do with the DMCA. And it's kind of ISPs were still yanking people.
But it's just that way in general. If you have, if a company with that pays for lawyers by the pound goes after you, you got to think twice about fighting them. Is that tort reform? What is that? I mean, what do we need to do?
Well, I mean, have you seen the chillingeffects.org? It's a great website, and it
love
just tracks.
And give them money is one way to start.
Yeah, and EFF is good about defending.
Well, and hopefully one of them will help somebody pay to fight it, because I think what you need is a couple of test cases, a couple of precedent cases where somebody actually does fight back and they win, and then it's not as easy to basically just threaten them out of existence.
I believe that Canada is a less litigious environment. I think one of the reasons is that if you sue and you lose, you owe court costs.
Yeah, I think that's British court.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe one way to do that. This is one, Kevin, you may not like this. If Kevin Mitnick were here, I know he wouldn't like this. The FCC is investigating those caller spoofing sites.
I know a few friends.
Well, then we talked about this. In fact, the last time you were on, I think we talked about caller spoofing.
We probably
sites.
Did.
Yeah.
I think
these are those sites you go and you can call from any phone number you choose, the White House or whatever. Mm-hmm.
And I've never done that because even though it's accessible to me, it's too easy a prank. My pranks have to be worthy. And it's just anybody will think, I'll give them a call from the police or something. And I've always thought about calling somebody at work from their home phone. That's the only one I would maybe go that far.
I got a call once from my home phone, actually. My husband was fooling around with voice over IP. I'm just saying, if the FCC gets its way with those spoofing sites, then VoIP is next.
It's actually pretty dangerous, though. I mean, you can... A friend of mine actually tried to get into his own voicemail by spoofing his own number. And a lot of voicemail systems and providers won't check and won't ask you for a password as long as you're calling from your own line.
Right.
So when that happens, you can easily break into anybody else's voicemail. So it's...
I didn't think of that. So put a password on and make sure that your provider requires it.
Right.
Wow.
What I'm told, there is real information on the line that comes to every phone about what number it came from, but that doesn't show. It's not part of the voice, the ID system. The caller ID system. There's a real one, so I don't know which one. I would think they would use the real one.
Yeah, they need to patch
that
then.
Well, and the reason that this is what Kevin Mitnick told us, was that this is actually a feature. It's intentional. So that a large organization can have one phone number as its outgoing number. The New York Times, will have one phone number as its outgoing number, no matter what the reporter is calling from. The FCC says they're investigating whether it violates the Federal Communications Act by failing to send accurate originating calling party telephone number information on interstate calls. But then if that's the case, then when Microsoft calls and it's all the same number, they'd be violating the law too, right?
Yeah. And telemarketers get to where they get a whole ton of area codes in every state, and they just assign a different area code to the caller ID, different number every time they call you, rather than paying attention to the do not call whatever.
This is a case now. One of the sites is run by a 21-year-old kid, Telespoof, and he says he's looking for a lawyer. So poor kid. He says, I'm not giving the FCC anything. So I don't know if this is one where I would donate to save.
Well, I think they've made a lot of money. Most of them don't do it for free. They'll charge you X number of cents per minute.
Yeah. Did you see Senator Wyden's bill? Has anybody taken a look at that?
He's my new hero.
I like this.
Yeah.
Ron Wyden of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Network operators will be barred from blocking or degrading internet connections and favoring those of companies that pay for peppier access. In other words, no two-tier internet.
Yeah.
Right on, Ron.
Plus, it doesn't have a really clever acronym. You know what I mean? It's like the Internet Non-Discrimination Act of 2006.
We've got two-tiered internet right now where people don't get served by their local phone company with DSL because they're too far.
Too far from that.
Yeah.
But that's a technical reason, right?
Yeah.
Well, but it could easily be. You couldn't be denied a phone, but you can be denied DSL.
Right.
So there's a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
But I'm more comfortable with them having issues with the distance they can send DSL out over copper than I am with somebody going, we'd like to charge the people who provide you with content after we've charged you and spent lots of money building a, I mean, it's
and
like,
after we've already charged them, how different is this,
though, than from when I sign up for DSL, I get different speed options at different prices.
I think I'm okay with it being different speed options at different prices at my option to buy in. However, if I'm saying, if I'm paying X number of dollars a month for this service level, and I'm not even going to get into the issue of packet shaping, which is my new personal favorite pain in the ass on the internet right
now. This is where they block BitTorrent because they don't want you using
it. Not even packet shaping, or they degrade, they basically look at it, and it's like, if it's this sub of packets, they slow it down.
Right.
Or they take your IP address and they look at the amount of traffic you use at a particular service or particular application, and if it gets over the level they decide, it just tapers off your access.
Patrick, that's always been the case where we signed up for a service without knowing how much we get a certain speed from our home, but we don't know how much the ISP can handle, how many homes they're handling with what data paths, so we never really knew for sure what throughput you could get.
I think what's different about this is that they've already charged the content providers and they've already charged the consumers, and rather than raising the price of broadband, rather than just saying to the content providers, okay, unfortunately you have to pay more because broadband costs more, they're saying you have to pay more to make sure that you're delivered in a timely fashion, even though they've already paid, and it raises the specter that they'll degrade the service of people who don't pay, and on top of that, the reason they want to do it partly is that they want to deliver their own content, so there's a sort of a huge conflict of interest element there. Verizon
But if it does cost more to deliver, you know, reliably, rapidly,
then raise the prices.
The price should be higher.
Upfront raise costs instead of just charging them on the back end.
Raise the prices of access. Don't say, you know, you have to pay more to prioritize your delivery when you're already paying for delivery. Just raise the cost of delivery.
It should be a bunch of RBox going, hey, we got the COPPA. We got the last mile. You want to serve your customers? Give us a little something on the side. You know what I mean? And it's like,
That's exactly what they said. We built the network. We own the network.
It is.
Everybody's got to go along with what we're saying.
And what's disingenuous about it is that they're trying to say that content providers are currently getting a free ride. Right. You hear that a lot. Google's getting a free ride, and they're just freeloading on our backbone, which is ridiculous.
Quote,
they're paying.
The consumer. The consumers built the network. The subscribers built the network. They paid for the network. Yeah. So it's...
Well, and I think...
It's a lot.
The
consumers pay and the content providers pay. They're getting paid on both ends, and they just want to get paid again.
And a company
But we could get rid of spam if only the providers paid.
We're going to get to that. That's actually
how the story is
related.
We get rid of spam if only spammers pay for spam.
Yeah, we'll talk
about
that.
That whole AOL email thing is...
Well, should we go to it now? I mean,
more lies.
Well, have you seen the audio broadcast flag bill that was introduced? That's the other one.
All right, we'll get to that in a second, since the AOL thing is so closely related to this. I have to say, I'm on the side of AOL on this one, but I'd like to hear what you guys think, because there's some very heavy people fighting against them. AOL and Yahoo plans to do this eventually, but AOL has gone to a company called Goodmail, and the idea is that Goodmail certifies mass mailers. So let's say you're the American Red Cross, one of the companies that, in fact, has signed up for this. You send out a lot of mail. It's legitimate mail, but it's often tagged as spam. You want to make sure that it gets through to the people who asked for this mail. You also have a secondary problem, in this case, of people posing as the American Red Cross, fishers, pretending they're the American Red Cross and asking for money illegitimately. So Goodmail, what Goodmail does is it certifies that this mail came from the American Red Cross, and then, in fact, it's not spam. Now, American Red Cross will pay a small fee, about a quarter of a cent per email for this, or any mass mailer can do this. AOL's saying, we want to use this system. It's not going to replace spam filtering. People don't have to pay to get mail through the AOL system, but we think this is a way that we can let companies that want to do legitimate mass mailing not be branded as spammers. Well, I think you have to say, do you trust Goodmail to certify this? But the EFF is against it. Michael Geist, who is a really great guy for these rights at the University of Toronto, Ottawa, we're going to get him on a triangulation on this at some point. Cory Doctorow, a lot of the people that we like and respect say this is a terrible idea because this is the beginning of a paid email system.
It's like crack by crack. Spammers are going to be legitimized. We don't want to do that.
But what if it's, you know, there are people who send legitimate mass mailings who aren't spammers, right?
Who will then
have... Is all mass mail spam?
Well, I pretty much treat it that way. It's, I mean, 99.999. I don't know.
Well, what if it's your, for example, what if it's your bank statement from your bank? I mean, a bank potentially could be considered a mass mailer because they send out a statement to millions of people every week, every month. Should they have to then pay extra to make sure that that's delivered?
I think that's good, but who's going to decide who is...
Well, this company
exactly.
should
well, that's the question.
That's,
yeah.
that's where it gets kind of messy.
And well, how many mails constitute mass right. mail?
Good Mail says very clearly, we are going to only certify people who are sending mail out that's been requested.
And the president can certify anyone he wants.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, I guess it does come down to, do you trust Good Mail? But let's say you do trust Good Mail. Is there anything wrong with this? Because I don't think people are attacking Good Mail, per se. No, they're attacking the notion of paid email in general.
I mean, you can consider it a slippery slope where it's, you know, that point where, yeah, okay, these companies are going to pay Good Mail to, you know, certify their mail. But what's next? I mean, you know, eventually it's going to get to the point of, well, maybe if you want your email to get there, you know, sometime, you know, in the afternoon instead of tomorrow at the end of the week, you can pay us and we'll guarantee a quality of service for
right.
your email.
Well, it's the same argument as the two-tiered internet.
I think
it's
the problem similar, is yeah. is that you have a lot of companies that need to deliver this mail, but the spam filters are picking up and blocking it.
That's my...
I mean, we run into the same problem at Dig. You know, we send out so many new... People request to a new account.
You
we make
like
them verify
you.
Via email. So we send out an email to that address that they've requested, but sometimes it gets put into the spam bin because, you know, there's all these services that have these advanced algorithms now that will go in and flag it as spam
right.
and get rid of it, even though the user requested that email.
We have that problem, too, sending out approvals on twit.tv and PixelCorp has a 250,000 person mailing list. These are people who asked to be contacted by PixelCorp. It's not spam. It's getting to the point where you can no longer send out mass mailings.
Well, then what do you do if you're in the position of not being able to afford or not wanting to pay a penny per email to send that? Then what happens is you find yourself in a situation where the guaranteed mail that you're guaranteed to get is all spam. Because they're the people who can afford to pay to send out the emails.
Well, unless you use spam arrest or some other... You know,
well, and that's the question. Is this certified email, will they allow spammers? Good Mail says, no, we're not going to allow spammers access to this. This is for legitimate mass mail.
And that's silly. Come on. Spammers can get around anything.
Maybe.
They'll find a way to get themselves
the, website,
not, no,
the website...
Not around spam arrest. Not around the query response systems.
If you want to...
Yeah, no, that's true. But I think that's not... You'd have to run that then on top of AOL and Yahoo, and then you're sort of... Then what's the point of them charging spammers to try to stop spam?
The website is dearaol.com if you want to sign the petition. Stop AOL's email text. And it said, this is the letter they write. This system would create a two-tiered internet in which affluent mass emailers, notice they don't say spammers, mm-hmm. but affluent mass emailers could pay AOL a fee that amounts to an email tax in return for a guarantee that such messages would bypass spam filters and go directly to the inboxes.
One interesting thing to note is that AOL today said they would not charge nonprofits.
That's right.
Because that was the big
they're going to support nonprofits.
Complaint.
But you look at, I mean, it's interesting who's on this. I mean, you've got EFF, you've got Move On has been very active in this. A lot of charities like Oxfam are involved. A gun rights lobby, Chris Perillo.
he's a nonprofit.
Chris Perillo and the NRA.
Together at last. So it's an interesting mixed bag of people who are on this petition.
I mean, interesting.
What this is essentially is a business opportunity for Good Mail Systems. I mean, if you look at the front page of Good Mail System, it's really funny because it links to their Get the Facts page, and it's like, fact, AOL and Yahoo are not taxing email.
Well, that's in response to
all
this.
Something right. Is required to pay. Taxes are uniformly imposed charges, but it's like, okay, great. So if I send out a whole lot of emails because I'm a corporate entity, I can choose to pay a quarter of a cent to 1 cent per email I send out to ensure that they will receive AOL and Yahoo customers. You know, if we did AOL and Yahoo and Google, we could have a really nice trifecta of a huge percentage of the email accounts, you know, in North America. Mm-hmm. And it's like, are you comfortable with the idea that the people who have to...
You like that song?
Somebody's got the country going.
They're closing up. It's rock out time.
You know what I mean? But it's a little, you know.
If it's legitimate, fine. But at that price, it still makes profit for spammers.
It really, I think it does come down to, do you trust Good Mail and do you trust AOL? And I think the concern is that AOL, this is one of the things they say. Well, as soon as AOL gets more money for some kinds of mail, they're going to encourage that kind of mail and not... And discourage.
Well,
the other
it hurts matter. The small businesses because if you think about it, like, let's say they do a good job, you know, and not a whole lot of spammers get access to the system and it's working. But then you have the small businesses that have, you know, they want to send out 10,000 emails. They don't make a whole lot of money.
Right.
Are they going to be able to afford to pay that tax? I mean, it might be cheap enough, but it's just another expense that they really don't need.
I think there's also the case to be made that no spammer is going to pay even a quarter of a cent
per email because it's not so lucrative. Spam's not so lucrative. You think
it's
so?
Not, but I think they would pay.
Well, it is, but in the masses, right? It's like,
well, if you're sending a million, which they routinely do, a million emails a day, that's a significant amount. You're 25,000 a day to send these emails? What is it? No, maybe it's not quite that much.
But a quarter of it,
I don't know. Somebody
You might be right. You might be right.
I think that many people have said if there were any cost to this, spammers would fold up their tents. The reason spam works is because it's essentially free.
But you got to remember this is not stopping spam. This is just guaranteeing a free ride through spam filters.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's my point, difference. Is that no spammer will pay for this.
You know? And this
that
is
only a legitimate company will pay for this.
But if you were a spammer, though, consider that suddenly you would have free and unrestricted access to inboxes that were previously being filtered by spam filters. It's possible that you might decide that the opportunity for increased visibility was actually worth the cost, and I don't want to be in a position where I'm allowing spammers to pay for a free ride right into my inbox.
This I understand.
Leave AOL and leave Yahoo.
This I understand, but I do think we need to solve this issue of how do you do mass mailings. You know, Steve Gibson's going to basically stop sending out mass mailings. He's going to send out one more because it's so hard for him to get, you know, and these are all people who signed up, you know, for his mailings. So it's very it's tough if you are the American Red Cross, a charity, or if you're a business person with a mailing list. They're no good anymore. What do you do on Dig? I mean,
well, we just continue to send an email. It works. It's just it's a pain sometimes because there's some people that it gets blocked. And we have to help them out manually.
I get a dozen emails a day from people who don't get their passwords. And I know it's spam filters because most of them do get their passwords. Right. But I don't have time. I have to go into PHP MyAdmin and go into the database and every time.
And dig out their name.
It's a real pain. I don't have any system to do this. I mean, it's just me. So I'm kind of sympathetic to this issue. Yeah.
The real problem is caused by spammers. And there's a lack of spam. You know, spam filters can't be perfect.
Right.
I have to look at all my spam to catch a few.
What about more severe laws for spammers?
Yeah. Yeah. I think what they need is
offshores.
Yeah, they were.
Death penalty.
No.
And Sokol says kill them.
We pay for the spammer's email, basically. I mean, our rates are set by the local ISPs who have a certain amount of equipment that's paid for and people maintaining salaries.
Right.
And they figure out what's the profit on top of that. We're going to charge our consumers to pay for all our equipment. Now, the spammer stuff just comes in free, and every bit that comes in free, you've paid for the excess equipment at your ISP for the incoming as well as the outgoing. So you've paid for the spam. And if everybody had to pay for sending mail for every bit you send, I think that would go a long way to stopping the spam. Just like 25 cents, that might, or a quarter of a cent, that might be enough because they say that one out of 200 spams has to go through to make it profitable for the spammer. It has to be, you know, somebody has to click on it and buy something. Well, one out of 200, that means 200 spams at that rate is what? Is that $50 or am I off?
I don't know.
Or is it $5?
But I think
I felt like an idiot that I couldn't figure it out.
But that comes back to what Kevin said, though, is that once you make it cost prohibitive for the spammers, you also make it even more cost prohibitive for small businesses, for nonprofits, for, you know, anybody who's trying to
So basically only banks will be able to do this.
Yeah, but you know, I still get mailbox spam. You know, I still get it and I go down to the street and get my mail. They're still, they have to pay for, junk mail.
They pay for it.
There's definitely the question of how bad is spam, really. Yeah. It's really buggy that much.
So they get a low rate.
Yeah. So what's the audio broadcast flag story, Patrick?
Mike Ferguson, representative from New Jersey, has filed proposed legislation calling for a broadcast flag to be added to satellite digital radio.
So that you can turn off Howard Stern or Bubba the Love Sponge when the kids get in the car.
The RIAA is basically pushing to control access, basically to lock down access. This is very similar to a certain bill that was involving video that the FCC.
You knew this would happen the minute they put Howard Stern on satellite, that there would be an attempt to crack down on that. Don't you think? Or is it music? What are they worried about? The people stealing their music?
I think they're worried about anybody recording that signal and making any kind of a high-quality recording of the satellite radio.
It's
satellite
very useful
if
you make a low-quality recording with a microphone.
Right.
I mean, you can't for yourself. You can memorialize something you hear.
When they get the
home recording
jack in your neck,
didn't
eliminate the analog loophole.
Well, that's lockdown.
Well, you know, I'm against all. I'm against it.
You're against it?
I'm against it.
Yeah.
I'm against all these things.
It's getting rougher for them to propose that kind of stuff, though, because
the amazing thing is
and senators are wising up, and congressmen. Yeah. One of them got an iPod, and then that was kind of
That's what people have not been watching for the last 4 years, this broadcast flag thing working its way
slowly
into our media and what it's going to mean in the future.
Yeah.
They don't know. They don't even believe it when I tell them.
We talked about this the other day. This is the infuriating thing about HDCP. I mean, people, if you want to use a high-def DVD player, there, you'll have to have a DVI or HDMI input. That leaves out 3 million HDTV owners in the United States who, in good faith, bought their HDTV thinking, well, someday I'll be able to play high-def content on this thing. Guess what? You can't.
Surprise!
You can't. You have to, you know, you'll have to buy a new TV.
Plus there.
Dan Sokol's talking to us. He said there's a device that you can buy out of a small company in England. It'll do it without degrading it. It'll give you...
Yeah, it's straight through.
Ah, so there's a hack already.
Yeah, there's a hack. It's $300.
Even if HDCP is on this thing for $300, you can take it off. There you go.
Yeah, but there are various hacks, but why should you have to pay $300 for a TV
that you already spent? It's a third of the cost of the new HDTV.
We do have an audio.
Well, not if you spent
like $8,000 for a 60-inch HDTV. $300 is looking cheap.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially if it's not sold next year.
There was also a story about this week about HDCP on Mitsubishi TVs, I guess. It essentially breaks them so that if you're watching, it downgrades the signal to 720p. Yeah. And then they said,
480p,
whoa,
I think.
Or 480p.
Yeah.
Tom knows. Tom Merritt
480p,
knows.
480p, I believe, yeah.
But anyway, it's a miss. It's just a DRM screw-up.
We're at the Apple Store. We do want to thank the folks at the Apple Store for letting us be here. We have a microphone over there on my right. If anybody wants to ask a question or make a comment of the twits, please just walk on over to that red bozo nose over there. We use that red microphone wind screen so that it's very easy to find, and you can ask a question or make a comment to the twits. They're shy.
They're trapped in their seats.
They're shy. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think there's going to be a new market for 5.1 Dolby surround sound, QuickTime video, HD, and other formats?
I hope so.
Do you see the illegal market?
Ah.
And
for high def stuff that.
And regular def stuff.
Yeah, in fact, I think that when you see things like these HDCP, it just encourages people to make devices or figure out ways to crack it, so that, or just get BitTorrent and download a high def copy of the movie. I think that it's a completely opposite the intended effect that the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, wants. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, people see this, they go, first of all, I can't play my Blu-ray on an HD DVD, and I can't play my... And now they've got this copy. Screw it. Where's the BitTorrent client? I'm downloading it. Don't you think?
Yeah, and in most cases, I think we would pay for what it is
we'd want.
We'd be happy to pay, but there's no one that will take our money because they've got so many licensing hang-ups and so many DRM hang-ups.
They'll take your money. They just want to take your money for a download now and a DVD and a little thing for your PSP later on for an HD.
They won't take my money for a high-def online download of a movie.
Well, they will.
Online download, that was redundant.
Actually, there is a new porn site that does high-def downloads.
How do you always know so much about this?
I swear. And he looks at me as though I've been asking for this.
Well, I'm just saying that's, you know, the adult industry is the industry that leads always in this technology.
Leading edge.
They will lead us to salvation.
And in fact, they are offering streaming HD. Not streaming, probably, but they're offering HD. And much like the adult industry, Mac Break is in 1080p. So there you go.
How big a file is that?
It's gigantic. Killed Libsyn. We killed Libsyn on that Tuesday, you know. We made a Mac Break of the Apple announcement, which we posted around 10 or 11 at night on Libsyn. It was 335 megabytes. That was on Tuesday night. On Wednesday, Libsyn starts in the blog. You start seeing in the Libsyn blog, we're being DDoSed. We don't know what's going on. There's packets coming. There's packets flying everywhere. All the humanity. And eventually, then I got a note at 3 in the morning the next morning saying, we looked at our logs. It was you. So they pulled the file, and we've recompressed to 90 megs. And I hope that we don't bring it down. Now, I'm a little concerned because the video for this is also going to be on Libsyn. I was hoping. You know what? We interviewed the two guys, Dave and Dave, at Libsyn on Inside the Net. And I said, you know, we didn't put Twit on Libsyn. We were very lucky. We have AOL. We don't have to, but we didn't put Twit on Libsyn. I think Libsyn's a great service for podcasters. But we didn't want to bring you guys down. They said, bring it on. We can take it. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Who does Dignation's video? You do it.
No, we actually had to move to CashFly because it was just they couldn't handle it. And CashFly does Trillion and a few other folks. And
your files are how big?
They're a little over 100 megs, something like that. But the problem is that I guess when we release, because so many people try and download at the exact same time, we're bursting a little over 3 gigs.
That's the problem.
And a 3 gig pipe is a fat pipe.
Yep.
And
I've been actually talking with people about this. There is a real issue with podcast clients because they all
do the same behavior. The minute the feed, right. They check the feed all the time, first of all. And the minute they see it, they say, I'll get it. Yeah. And so 10,000, that's what happened. 10,000 clients hit Libsyn at the same time for 300 gigabytes.
Or if you release it at a certain time, everyone knows to come at that time and download. And,
so I have a scheme. Mm. I have a scheme I want to propose.
Is it a pay per download scheme?
No.
Just a
quarter of a cent.
Podcast tax?
No. Yes. There'll be two tiers. No, three. No, four. No, I think the idea really is to write a little script in the XML that takes one quarter of the requests and gives them the new feed, and then an hour later, again. So in other words, you have a smart RSS feed that parses out the files and spreads it out. Since the podcast clients aren't smart enough to do it, let's script our RSS.
Yeah, I'm feeling it's coming in the podcasting clients. It has to be.
It may have to, but you know what? People are going to start hacking around it because I've gotten like...
Because they want it now?
Yeah. I want it now.
No, I mean BitTorrent has to be coming in podcast.
Yeah, it needs
clients.
To be torrents.
Needs to be like,
well, that's because iTunes doesn't support. The minute iTunes supports BitTorrent, this whole thing goes away, right?
But awesome.
Will Apple ever do that is the question. I don't know.
Well, the problem is that if you have a fairly successful podcast, it's so expensive. Like Libsyn.
Yeah.
They're fairly cheap.
They're $30.
Which is awesome. But if you go into like a caching solution where you're on multiple servers spread out all over the states, I mean, our bandwidth bills are like $10,000 a month.
Yeah. Which that's what MuggleCast told me that they were theirs were similar. Yours?
That's cute.
What? Yours is more?
Yours are more?
I think we burned through 14 terabytes.
Oh, well, you're doing
since March 1st.
Oh, well, but that's not. I mean, as Kevin says, the amount of data isn't as much as the issue as the peak load at any one time. That's where it really gets
well,
expensive.
Well, the peak load's expensive, and the total bandwidth at the end of the month is expensive. Well, what would the bill for Twit be?
Well, that's 30 terabytes a month, thereabouts, something like that. So it would be a lot.
And if you've got
it would be.
It would be a lot. Thank you, AOL.
A quarter per gigabyte times 1,000.
You know, that's where that Goodmail money's going. They're supporting the AOL.com/podcast.
The Goodmail guys must be excited because they're like, they've got two of the largest and just biggest potential clients for their market possible. They just must be thrilled. Because you know that
they're thrilled,
people are more thrilled as their VC investors. Like, yes!
They were thrilled until everybody kind of started jumping down their throats.
Speaking of iTunes, did you see the Department of Justice open an antitrust probe today into collusion by the major record labels?
price
collusion, because they've been pushing so hard for more than 99 cents, basically, for song downloads. Yeah.
All right.
It's about, and so they've been saying different songs should cost different prices, and now apparently the DOJ is starting to think, thanks to Elliot Spitzer, maybe they've been talking together too much about how much these songs should cost.
They sound so similar.
Yeah. They all think Britney Spears should cost $2.99.
You know, I've never understood that. If you want to charge $2.99 for Britney Spears, go be my guest. You know, as long as Howlin' Wolf doesn't, right? Who cares what Britney Spears costs?
And then there was the all of MP3.com model.
Ah, yeah. My favorite.
Really? You use all of MP3?
It's great.
Yeah?
For
I don't
public domain
use
stuff.
Use it.
Oh, please.
It's not.
Hey,
it's legal.
All of MP3
it's,
maintains
well,
that they're
it,
legal.
It's legal in Russia.
It's illegal. It's illegal here, too. Yeah, oh, yeah.
But says who?
It's all who? Unlicensed.
They claim they've got a licensing service in Russia. They claim they pay into the license.
They're legal in
the
Russia.
Only, I believe that they're not legal in Russia, and the only reason they haven't been shut down is a weird loophole in copyright law about prosecuting online companies.
Right.
So
legal.
It is purely a loophole. I mean, I think the Russian government has essentially said it's illegal. But
the loophole is pathetic because it's like, because we were talking about this on DL.TV yesterday, because the loophole is that in Russia, performance being sent over something, and the other one is a cable service, and the internet could be considered kind of like a cable service, and that's the big, but they've managed to stay open because they've had at least two or three different investigations trying to shut
it down. Is in charge.
I'd feel guilty about it.
And they make a lot of money.
I use iTunes. Yeah. I get certificates there every once in a while, so I'm mostly going through the iTunes music store, but sometimes they won't have some really obscure stuff that I'm looking for, and all of MP3 has a pretty good selection of like little indie stuff that I can't find anywhere else, so
eMusic has a lot of indie stuff too.
I haven't used them in a long time.
They're still doing. They're pretty good. It's still MP3.
Is that all real stuff right now?
What's that?
Is it all real and coded?
No. It's MP3 and there's no DRM on it.
Oh, that's cool.
Nasty.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Nasty. And their download? I thought they were subscription.
eMusic.
Yeah. How is real still around?
I'll peep it.
They had a lot of really lucrative contracts in the beginning. Has anybody here installed a real client on their system in the last 3 years? Anyone running real?
deal.
Major League Baseball.
That's how they're doing. That's why.
Major League Baseball is
exclusive deals. And This American Life. NPR fans go crazy. This American Life is only available in real format.
Yeah, I get that on Audible as well.
But there's a Real Alternative, I think it's called.
Yes, I use that.
Software, yeah, so that you don't have to use Real.
Right.
Which,
how do they get away with that?
You get its little hooks in your system.
You host it in a foreign country, and you move to the foreign country, host it every couple of weeks.
The government, as long as nobody mentions them, it's okay. You have a new TV show on DLTV. I just saw a pilot. It's Dvorak's, actually.
Dvorak
has a new TV show.
Yeah, Dvorak's actually, we're calling it Cranky Geeks.
Cranky Geeks.
It is a pilot. Perfect for Dvorak. Yeah. It's Dvorak. It's going to be a rotating group of guests. Basically lead off of his column or whatever's got Dvorak's attention that week. And it's very similar to Silicon Spin was.
It sure looked like Silicon Spin, yeah. That's great.
It was a real simple shoot to put together that way.
Four chairs, backdrop, that's it. Yeah.
Black backdrop, easy to compress.
What's up at Mac Attic these days? Anything new or rum and Loyola?
I'm going down to Apple next week, but not for anything special.
Some fun new products?
Not for anything special.
Just for another sweatshirt.
Just for another sweatshirt. I need to do some shopping.
Please say hi to your wife, Christina. So, she should come on the show, too. We miss her. Christina also worked at Tech TV. And
she misses coming on for coffee.
She was at PGP. Is she still there?
She is at an encryption company that I will remain
with three letters.
Nameless, but they're pretty good.
They're good. So, they're pretty good, and they're private. Roger Chang has a job, thanks to Patrick Norton.
Yes, and I was actually working on the pilot of that John Dvorak show. There was more time spent hanging up the black curtain than there was
putting the chairs
setting up the spot.
Steve Wozniak, great to see you. Did you come in here? Was it like a conquering hero walking in the Apple store to the all back?
No, it was quiet. I just came up and sat down and didn't look at anybody.
He came by chariot.
I managed to avoid them.
Yeah. I am here, Ben Hur.
No, it's worse than New Zealand.
That must have been fun. I saw some of the pictures.
Yeah.
It looked like it was a great time. You didn't lose, but you didn't win.
Segway polo. First international match ever. We tied, so we kept the WAS Challenge Cup.
You brought it back?
Well, we left it there for a while, but it's coming back. The next match will be in our country in the summer. We'll choose where it is.
Texas.
Yeah, there's a picture of you.
There'll probably be about six countries in the next one.
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of teams forming.
That's great. Segway polo. You didn't ride your Segway in here, though.
Nope.
Hard to get it up the stairs.
Molly Wood with
The rain. I didn't want to.
With Buzz Out Loud. Mm-hmm. I always want to say Buzz All Out, but it's Buzz Out Loud.
Buzz Out Loud.
Yes, at CNET. And great. I listen every day. You and Tom Merritt and Veronica
Belmont. Right over there.
Hello.
Is that Veronica?
Yeah.
Hi, Veronica.
The famous Veronica in person.
Veronica.
Everyone's like, wait, where?
Nice to see you.
Veronica's the cute one.
Okay, now she's got to be protected. And Kevin Rose, glad you could be here.
Yeah,
things going well on Dig.
Yeah, we got some, we're launching a new feature in the next couple days. So, brand new comment system.
I saw the beta of that.
Yeah, what'd you think?
That's really
pretty cool.
Great looking.
Yeah.
You get to, it's Ajax, you get to squeeze the comment away.
Yeah, so if you don't like something, you can bury a comment or you can dig a comment if you're into it, and it just like kind of folds up for you.
I love that.
It's really
that
cool.
Great.
We've needed something like that for a while, and you can finally edit your comments.
Can you ignore a person and have all of their comments fold up?
Yeah, you block a person, you won't see anything site-wide.
I'm thinking of putting a karma system on the twit.tv. It's very easy to implement. Drupal supports
it. Oh, nice.
And that would be another way of getting that, kind of a poor man's way. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like Drupal. It's good stuff.
Drupal's very good. I've been very happy with it. Now, the design is out. Somebody dug it. But
I saw that. It looks awesome. Your new design is amazing.
Yeah, it's very nice. Amber and her team.
You have to go check it out. Is it on your site?
It's not up yet because I don't want it's because it's not real. It's just a dummy. It's like the storefront in the Western. You know, there's nothing behind it.
It's
so
cool.
Once I start hooking up, don't touch that. No. Once I start putting the wiring in, I'll probably put a beta site up. But it's very nice. We needed to do that. We needed to make it look more like a network site and less like a blog. You know, we are going to be launching a new podcast, I think, next week. I'm in negotiations with somebody you all know, Chris DeBona.
Woo-hoo!
From Google. He's the open source guy at Google. I wanted to call it Floss Weekly. Floss is free Libre open source software, but he didn't like that name. So we're going to come up with another name. But we want to do it. We felt like we needed an open source Linux podcast, so we're going to be doing
that. That's cool.
That.
Chris is an awesome guy.
Fun. And Chris is a great guy. A lot of contacts, so it should be should be fun to see who he dredges up. Thank all of you for being here. It's really great to see you all. Thanks for stopping by in the rainy San Francisco day. And thanks to the folks at the Apple Store for providing us with this great space. We just love coming here and doing the show here. We'll just have to come back real soon. Our friends at AOL Radio who provide us with the bandwidth, we couldn't do it without them. Oh, man. AOL.com/podcasting. We thank you. I forgot to mention them last week, so I'll give them a double plug. And just because he's not here, Dvorak.org/blog. Another twit is in the can. Tech. This week in